Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing well, John. How are you?
If you've listened before, you were expecting that. Steve is always on.
I'm always well. I'm always doing well.
And always watching the markets.
Really interesting. Yeah. So it just came out today that the company Affirm, which is, of course, in the BNPL space, and they're public now in the US, their stock prices popped significantly because they announced a partnership with Amazon to provide buy now, pay later services for purchases over $50 to all customers.
Is partnering with Amazon kind of like sticking your head in the lion's mouth?
I think it is, except it may end worse if that's even possible. Yes.
We just need to see your source code, just real quick.
Exactly. Just your numbers and then we'll see.
We've never cannibalized anybody.
No. Not at all. Not at all.
Buy now, pay later is kind of like the Australian invasion? Swedish invasion?
I think it's both, actually. Klarna is Swedish, but I think a lot of the other players like OP and Afterpay are actually from down under.
All right. Well, we are lucky to have an expert in the buy now, pay later space, the CEO of OP USA, the US division of OpenPay, and also its chief strategy officer, Brian Schneiderman. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be here, Steve and John.
Well, a lot going on in buy now, pay later. Very hot area in the past, I guess since the beginning of the pandemic, it really started to get attention, or at least I started seeing it in the news. A little bit older in Australia, where it's been a little bit longer and has a much wider market share, and in Sweden, where Klarna has kind of boomed out of there. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing for buy now, pay later in the U.S.
Yeah, well, it's been really interesting. I saw sort of the pre-tremors, if you will, about 18 months ago when I was at Deloitte. I was the partner running the payments practice globally for Deloitte. So I worked with all the largest merchants. I started to get a bunch of inbound requests that I typically didn't see, but maybe once every 6 months. Started to see them monthly and then weekly and then two requests a week. And I realized these pre-quakes were amounting to something much bigger. And
requests for buy now, pay later?
Yeah, the merchants, there were really two kinds of merchants. There was one that was saying they were not accepting buy now, pay later installments in general. And they were losing, some of them, double-digit revenue, believe it or not, because they weren't offering it. And people were going elsewhere.
So market share was shifting already.
Oh, yeah. 18 months ago, it really started. And so even before COVID, it was starting to warm up, but it just got red hot or white hot during COVID. So that was one group of merchants. The other group of merchants were those that got in early with the what we call pay in fours typically, or the traditional consumer lenders, and were not happy. And they were looking to switch because they were very unhappy with early choices they made or exclusivity that they signed. And so there were these two groups that were clearly emerging in sort of the theme, two themes. And, you know, I was running RFPs, you know, for a lot of merchants. They'd call me and say, we need a new payment processor. We need to, you know, add Alipay or Apple Pay or whatever the new, you know, du jour payment method that consumers want. And so I was doing these projects, these RFPs. And I started to connect dots and realize something much bigger was happening around us.
So you were in Deloitte in which part of the company?
Yeah, it's kind of a bird's eye view of themes and patterns when you're, I was on the consulting side. And so I launched in 2006, the Deloitte's global payments practice, grew to 64 countries. So the largest in the industry of payments practices. And that just, you know, really gave me, as I say, that bird's eye view. But what's interesting is you alluded to in your opening is that this already existed elsewhere. You know, in payments, we're late to the game on just about everything in the United States. We were late to the game on real-time payments, finally catching up or trying to catch up. Buy now, pay later was not new. And Australia is a little bit of the fertile crescent, if you will, for buy now, pay later. As you know, some of our peers launched about the same time, maybe a little earlier than us. We've been around for about 8 years. We're in, you know, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. And now, as of the first of this year, in the US.
So what do you think, Brian, that the US market is so it's has been sort of a laggard in the BNPL space? And what will you guys do to actually make sure that we close that gap?
I think initially there were a few early successes from some of the pay in four. So you really had a lot of demand early on from largely those roughly around the age of 20 years old, financing things like t-shirts and tennis shoes, $50, $100, $200. And you have a clear distinction between buy now, pay later and traditional consumer lending, largely in that there isn't really much regulation at all in the US for things that have four or fewer installments. Once you go over more than four installments, you tend to get on the characterization of a lender versus just an installment provider. That's why you see so many of them out there like that. And that took off. Young consumers really liked it. And it's really what I call BNPL 1.0. It's kind of the Neanderthal version of buy now, pay later. And most of those were capped. You couldn't really do the meaningful stuff. You know, if you needed a new alternator in your car, or if you needed a crown or a root canal, you had a leaky roof, that stuff you really couldn't finance. I mean, you could, but look, four payments is not that much different than, paying off a credit card after 30 days, which is kind of like free money for 30 days, right? Mm-hmm. But with pay in four, typically it's every other week. So that gets you an extra month. But if you're in meaningful stuff, say $1,000 to $20,000, BNPL 1.0 just doesn't give you enough time or go large enough for those types of loans, of purchases. And what we started to see was when you offer it, people bought more frequently and people bought larger baskets. They were more elastic. So, that elasticity for a silver crown versus the dentist wants you to get the better porcelain one that lasts longer and looks better, people would convert. They would actually upsell to a better product.
You seem to be rather bullish on the notion that in the US, we'll move away from credit cards and go towards BNPL solutions or BNPL type solutions. So I use my credit card quite frequently. I love the points. I love the convenience. I use my Google Pay to pay for stuff when I go to a supermarket. What would be the compelling proposition that would make me be a BNPL user? And I should know that actually I've never used BNPL, but John has. We went to a Giants game a few weeks ago and John bought tickets through a BNPL tool. But why should I use this tool to make my life better?
So first of all, the amazing thing about BNPL is it's instant credit at the point of sale, which means you're not guessing what a person's going to be buying, how large it's going to be, how long until they pay it off. All those things with a credit card, you have to factor in a lot of unknowns when you issue that credit card. That means you've got to put a very high interest rate APR on that product to cover yourself as a company, as an issuer. Well, when somebody's buying something at a given moment in a given place for a given item with a set plan to pay it off, you can actually make better decisions and offer more credit to people, more credit to more people that would otherwise not get it. But also, there's a lot of people that would just never buy something if they had to pay it off in 30 days or get hit with, say, a 36% APR on a credit card. So you've got to really separate the world into the, what we call the transactors and the revolvers. And mm-hmm. For those of your listeners that don't understand, a transactor is somebody that typically gets the points like you and almost always, if not always, pays it off in 30 days. Mm-hmm. The revolvers keep a balance. And those balances, as we all know, can be a very expensive and oftentimes dangerous trap, a debt trap. What buy now, pay later does is it's a much more precise instrument that allows people to be assessed at that moment and offered credit, which is not an open line of credit. They're different. It's not that credit card's going to go away. It's that a lot of people that use a credit card, the way they use it, they'll find that a BNPL, particularly what I call 2.0, not 1.0, is just a better option.
One thing I liked about using buy now, pay later, and this is just very recently, I've used it for two purchases, And one thing that was, it was really convenient. It was really quick, just a couple of steps. And I think if there had been like one or two steps more, I would have just said, forget it.
Right.
But it was just so quick. I'm like, well, why not? You know, it doesn't cost me anything. And I feel a little bit richer because that's going out into the future, even if it was both of these were a pay in four arrangement. So not that much further, but hey, this is going into the next paycheck or whatever around. And it kind of keeps a little bit more money in my account. So that's kind of nice. The other thing is, I don't feel like I'm, and you mentioned this a little bit, where it's not this open credit line. It's not something I have to manage afterwards. You know, I don't have to worry about, what's on this credit line or, you know, what's on this balance. This is just going to get done, wiped out, and it's going to self-destruct and be disappeared once it's paid. And I don't think there was a credit check involved. I didn't see any disclosure or anything about that.
Yeah, they usually.
So that's a nice thing. It's not going to ping my credit.
Pull, by the way, there's a difference between a soft pull and a hard pull. The hard pull shows up on the file, mm-hmm. and the soft pull does not show up on the file. So that's the
that's a big plus to me. I think Steve and I have this game where we compare credit scores once in a while. Knowing that it doesn't impact that is great. One I used is QuadPay, and I was surprised they had that for baseball tickets. And I was worried like, oh, this is going to be another thing I have to keep track of. There's going to be, you know, every 2 weeks, oh, when's that payment coming out? But when they sent the text and the email saying it's going to be tomorrow, that kind of relieved that for me, actually. I didn't worry about it too much.
We've gotten so much better at customer experience with mobile and the use of mobile, and COVID certainly has helped, you know, with online and mobile experiences, because we've all had to invest a lot of money and time into coming up to speed as people left the store and went home. So I think there's something there in that the environment helped push it along. You guys are talking a lot about the pay in four BNPL, and that is typically smaller items. It's zero interest unless you miss a payment. If you're, you know, a day late or a dollar short, you can get hit with some serious penalties and, you know, deferred interest, back interest, some really nasty little tricks. So all those paying for BNPL all the way on the left. And then to the right, the other bookend is traditional consumer loans. And those typically carry 27 to 36%, even higher APR. And those can go larger and longer. They can go, you know, $5,000, $10,000 or more, but they're really high interest. So the question was, can you find something that's in the middle that's doesn't charge any interest at all, is a flat fee, has a low APR, single digit effective rate, that's basically what the fee is on top of what the total, you know, amount you're borrowing is, and has no interest, no tricks, no traps, no back interest, no deferred interest, you know, but would still go very large. And that's what was missing. That was the gap that OpenPay brought to the market.
Yeah, that's a really good point you're making, is that buy now, pay later, BNPL is not one monolithic thing. Every company seems to have some variations and focus, different markets that they focus on that have different needs. So what are the revenues? How are you getting your revenues? Is it just the merchant fees?
Yeah, so we take a fairly unique approach. We split it. We think that there's a fair small fee that the merchant can pay and a fair small fee that the consumer can pay. Again, single digit, both of them. And that if we actually see losses that are lower from a merchant, we can rebate them. So we can get them really low rates, low single digits, which is pretty unheard of. The only reason we can do that is we don't offer this for every industry, every vertical, as we say, or sub-vertical. Like, we won't do it for trade schools because the loss rates are really, really high. So we just don't touch it. But we will do it for, you know, the CPA exam prep, bar exam prep, medical school exam prep, that kind of stuff. Those guys really do pay off their loans. And so by having really low loss rates and then doing it at very, very large volumes, we don't go merchant to merchant with these deals. We actually negotiate them with the largest processors in the world, the largest financial institutions, insurance companies. Then we get the volume, so our cost of capital is really low and we have a really low loss rate. So we can offer a single digit APR and split it between the consumer and the merchant.
So the main penalty, if you're you're late is you can't use the platform anymore, but you're not paying any late fees?
Not at all. No, we wouldn't cut you off from the platform. The way we handle it is we don't raise your rate because there's no interest rate. We just keep, you pay that same flat fee. Let's just say you bought something and, you're paying a, 9.99% or less, a single digit as a percentage, the flat fee as a percentage of that amount. It's always going to be that. And if you're late, you don't get kicked off the platform. You'll pay either $7 or $10 late fee, and only twice. We don't make money off late fees. We just wanted a little something in there so people didn't just not pay. So our average customer tends to be 40 years old, tends to be a parent with, or two parents with kids getting braces, again, somebody repairing their roof or their car, their transmission, getting a root canal. So it's a very different approach than sort of the, buy now, pay later for anything. I mean, I literally saw one for pizza. One of the companies you mentioned had during the Super Bowl, buy now, pay later, pay over four installments pizza. And it's like, well, you know what? If you can't afford the pizza, buy a slice or get a bowl of cereal. I mean, Come on. That's I just don't think that's right. But
have there been some markets or demographics that kind of behaved unexpectedly well or badly than you expected in this past year?
I think the community that serves consumer lending has a pretty consistent understanding of those who can pay.
These are kind of known behaviors.
Yeah. Whenever a black swan event like COVID or something like that happens, you do have anomalies. So take airline pilots. I mean, they make a lot of money. They're, and they earn it and they deserve it. So nothing against them. But all of a sudden, you had airline pilots that didn't have a job. So, you can't predict that. But for the most part, behaviors are fairly consistent. You see gig economy workers that have different patterns. They have sort of like bartenders and waitresses, their income can fluctuate up and down, and buy now, pay later can smooth that out for them. Because it may not be this month, but over the course of 2 or 3 months, they can smooth that out and get the money they need to repair those tires on their Uber car.
Match their cash flows a little bit better.
Yeah. Hmm. But, we're getting pretty sophisticated to look at different types of people and careers and such. And I think the industry has a pretty good handle on that. But the black swan stuff, it's just, been hard to predict something like a pandemic.
So I think I've got a good handle now on the economics, but I'm wondering also from a strategic perspective, right? If you could just put on your CSO hat for a second now, there seems to be a lot of players who are super well capitalized in the space. I think Klarna is worth something like 40 something billion dollars. Affirm, we just saw just their shares just popped. Square just purchased Afterpay a few weeks ago as well. What can you do to make OP a competitive product within this very, very crowded and very competitive space?
So stick true to the verticals that we do best: home improvement, healthcare, auto service and repair, and education. Let everybody else compete for a lot of the, every single industry out there, every vertical, every product side, the small products, the highest risky customers. We stay true to the things we do really well, which are the most meaningful, a lot of times non-discretionary things, where you have a life event and you need some form of, ability to smooth that out over time. That's really what we will do well. And then doing it with ecosystem partners and aggregators so that we can get huge volumes and keep our risk low and offer a ridiculously low, cost product, that effective APR of a single digit. It kind of reminds me of Southwest Airlines, $200 round trip, New York to LA and back. They said it couldn't be done. And, they're the only airline still out there that hasn't gone out of business or merged to stay in business, right? That's what we're doing. We're doing it with a platform that similar to the way they built their platform with their standard chassis for all the, all the equipment types, the planes. We have a very purposeful built platform that allows us to do things at scale, but still tailored to these verticals. Our plans are designed specific to things like dental, specific to things within auto that are the type of repair. And you don't really see that with others. So look, if we stay true to what we do best and we do it at big scale and a really low price, I think that's going to be the secret to success for us. And, you know, there'll be some things coming down the road. We're publicly traded, so I can't talk about it. But I think the U.S. market will really get to know us over the next few months. You know, we only go live with our first customer, EasyVet, which has about 1,200 veterinarian offices in the U.S. That's our first go live in October. And then after that, we have a long list, about 10, that will be going live after that. So the U.S. market doesn't really know us yet, Opie. They know a little bit about our parent by looking overseas, but we're a new player in town. And, you know, we brought on some incredible talent. Our chief product and compliance officer was formerly heading up policy for this area over at CFPB. Mm-hmm. We brought over our head of risk, came from Synchrony. So we've got some really talented, seasoned people, and we're going to do some pretty game-changing things with this this very unique flat fee product that people just haven't seen yet.
There's been significant pushback and sort of skepticism, especially from the banking sector, about the BNPL solution. I know that Chase, for example, essentially they were quite vocal about their how they felt about the promise of BNPL, but it seems like they're coming around now. So how do you see the evolution between providers like yourself and the big banks in the U.S. evolving in, say, 3 to 5 years?
Well, nothing will change your mind and opinion like losing customers. I think very highly of Chase. I think they'll make their pivots and they'll do well. But I think it was a bit of, you know, this too shall pass with all the banks. And then, you know, we've gotten, I have to tell you, probably one major bank a month calling us saying, how do we play together? How do we work with you guys? Reaching out to us. So I think we've turned a corner there where, you know, denial is it's not a solution. But, you know, there is something else we didn't talk about that I think your users should be aware of, your listeners should be aware of. And that is the regulation. I think that we're going to see these pay in four loans fully regulated down the road. That's why we've chosen just to go and be fully regulated and licensed.
Which is, I think, what happened in the UK, right? They have some stuff in place now.
Exactly. That's what the FCA is essentially doing, is trying to gain control over this runaway, you know, trend. And I see a lot of what some of the pay in fours in particular, but also some of the larger, you know, traditional lenders out there, that really it gets pretty close to the line, if not over, on things like UDAP and CARD Act. And, you know, what we were trying to do with keeping unsafe products away from, you know, young consumers that didn't really understand what they were getting themselves into. You know, you mentioned earlier, just as an example, that it was so easy, you know, and you felt like you could go in and it would be gone in a month, 2 months. Well, the reality is a lot of these young consumers that are new to this, they don't realize that if you don't pay it off, it has repercussions that could hurt you for life and your credit. Because if you may not get a credit pull when you open it, but if you don't pay it off and if you're late, it will start to hurt your credit. And on top of that, if you've got 3, 4, 5, or more of these going on at the same time, trying to organize, keep track of those and pay those, it could get very complicated. So I remember when I was in college, they give you all these incentives, free t-shirts.
Oh, the free sweatshirt. Yes. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It starts to look a little bit like that when you see what some of the pay in fours are doing. And so we've chosen to take the high road. I think that that's going to be short lived. And I think a lot of these BNPLs, these pay in fours, they're not designed to deal with the cost of compliance, and they'll likely get acquired. And we will see continued consolidation in the space by those that license them and professionalize them, if you will. Mm-hmm. I just think we're a couple of years off before we start seeing that.
Are there any interesting technologies or financial products or companies that you think are doing especially interesting stuff these days?
Well, look, I'll call out our partners at Experian. I have a great deal of respect for what they've been doing. We actually brought on a former executive to help us really take advantage of all those capabilities and tools that they're doing over there. But one of the things I really love, have you guys heard of Boost? Are you familiar with that?
I don't think so.
It's where you can include like your rent payments and other things to improve your FICO score.
Yeah, Boost lets consumers lean into the process instead of just being a victim to the process, right? And learning about their credit score and not being able to influence it. So yeah, there are things that you can do to actually grow your scores. And I think that's brilliant. Experian really has some great tools in combination that can help people actually improve their situation rather than just learning the news and living with it.
Yeah, there has been more articles lately on the downsides of buy now, pay later in terms of things you've mentioned, exorbitant fees, especially if you're late or miss a payment, how you can get overextended by doing this across too many providers, especially for younger people if they miss payments and have that credit damage.
Right, but we've chosen not to do any. I mean, the two big ones are deferred interest, because they all say zero interest. But the reality is a lot of it is deferred interest. So then you get hit with an interest bomb later. People don't read the fine print.
So it's deferred interest, meaning?
No interest for whatever period of time. 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is. A lot of consumers assume that that means that there's no interest. It just means it's deferred. It's going to come due. The other is, back interest, where, okay, it's zero interest, but the few of you that miss a payment, you're going to pay all of our profits. And so we're going to kick you in the face while you're on the ground. Wait a minute. When somebody's down, that's not the time to take advantage of them. You got to help them up. That's our philosophy. Versus using that to pay for all the good credit scored people that never had a problem, and give them all zero interest. Those are gimmicks. Those are tricks, gimmicks, and traps. And we won't do it.
We have you recorded saying that. Yeah. We'll hold you to it.
We have the tape.
Yeah. I'm
the
happy
tape. See, how old are you, Steve? We have it on 8-track here.
We have it on 8-track. Yeah.
It's really, really valuable to be frictionless and integrated into the experience. What people love about Amazon is you shop, you slide, and you got it, right? It's done. There's very little or no friction. And if you can have a buy now, pay later, or a loan that is that easy at the point of sale, as well as for online payments, it becomes incredibly powerful. So the approach that we take is we integrate with the patient management systems and the dealer management systems for all the auto parts and similar across the other specialty areas that we focus on. That's really, really powerful.
So that kind of leads into another buzzword, the embedded finance, where everybody has similar bank-like products.
It's exactly what it is. And it's part of the promise of open banking, for those of you that are familiar with that out there. But it allows people at the right time to make a very easy decision, but it's got to be informed. And that's the key, an informed decision that's also easy and low friction.
How does it become informed if it happens so quick? You're just saying yes, yes. Nobody reads the disclosure. They click yes. I know I didn't. And then you just have this loan. I mean, it feels a little bit of a balance. Yeah, right. Between doing this quickly, you just want to get, let's say it's a medical thing. You're really not focused on that.
Yeah. I think there's a great deal of responsibility that the merchant needs to take. And a kind of a promise to a Hippocratic oath, if you will, to the consumer. Some merchants partner with these providers that they do it as an exclusive. So that there's no option for the consumer to pick which one is best for them based on their needs. And why does that happen? It's because some of our competitors will offer $1 million to get an exclusivity. And then when a consumer goes in and buys something, they assume that that deal that's been struck, it's being promoted by their dentist or their doctor or their, auto mechanic. It, must be reasonable. No. A lot of times it was put in front of them. There's no real understanding, transparency, and the agendas were very different. And so it might be a very high interest rate product. It might have these, tricks and gimmicks and traps that we talk about with deferred interest and back interest. And so I think there is a great deal of responsibility, particularly in the kinds of things like your educator or your healthcare provider, anybody that's involved in, your financial services, like your accountant and attorney, those people should be looking out for you. A little different, I guess, when you're buying tennis shoes or, you know, t-shirts, but for the meaningful things in life, really these, I think these merchants owe it to themselves and to their customers to be much more careful about who they partner with, but then not put an exclusive and give two or three options, you know, that might cover, you know, various types of people and their different lifestyle and their situation.
Well, you're certainly coming from the right place, Brian. We appreciate that. Keep up the good work and good luck on growing in the U.S.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Brian Schneiderman, CEO of Oppy USA and Chief Strategy Officer for OpenPay out of Australia. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.